You there, adventurer? Yes, you. Do you desire knowledge of immense worlds and arcane power? A codex of untold stories and lore? Or perhaps simply easy listening for your daily commute? Then feast your eyes, or more accurately, ears, upon Dungeonpedia. Shit's about to get nerdy in here.
Hello everyone, and welcome to Dungeonpedia, an exploration into the lore of Dungeons & Dragons. We're your hosts, Lewin Markell.
Taylor Stanfield.
And I'm Travis Peasley. And I don't know how interesting any of this stuff is to anybody else, but we've made some pretty impressive headway on our astrophotography setup here the past weekend.
It's been pretty cool.
A little frustrating, but it's been cool.
We finally refocused to a new target for the first time in months.
Yep. We got a whole new camera specifically dedicated to astrophotography. Like, it is built for astrophotography. We got it to where our mount can communicate with our computer and we can control what target we're looking at through our computer.
But unfortunately, Travis still can't do it from inside.
No. One, cords are not near long enough that connect everything. And, two, I just don't quite know how to set that up, even if the cords were long enough. I'll figure that out later. But one it is day. Cold as shit outside.
Oh, yeah.
See, that's why I have a nice indoor hobby.
It's cold, man. It's like 20-some-odd degrees outside, and I'm out there having to make sure everything is set up right. Mm-hmm. I mean, once I set the exposures, I'm good to just go back inside, but...
Indoor
for
hobby.
For the time, it's cold.
Yeah,
indoor hobbies.
Indoor hobbies would be nice.
Indoor hobbies would be essential if you were living on the elemental plane of ice.
Yeah.
I would definitely assume that would be
the case. It's probably also cold inside, even on the elemental plane of ice. I feel like
you really don't have a lot of places to hide.
I don't know how that's relevant.
If you were a para-elemental, an ice para-elemental, you would, want to live there.
What the
So
I'm assuming you're going to tell us what a pair of elements.
Today's topic sent me down a bit of a rabbit hole.
It did. I was privy to some of it
was
in and out of consciousness.
Take a shot every time Dungeonpedia says rabbit hole.
There are layers upon layers to getting into all of it. But just a little teaser, I had to close like 3 anime Wikipedia pages to get back on task.
What?
Pardon?
You went from elementals to anime Wikipedia pages?
I'll get there. I will
what?
Get there. Trust me, all will be explained.
I didn't know there was going to be anime in this episode.
Today we're going to talk about elementals.
No, we're going to talk about anime.
No. Okay, I mean very briefly, but...
but elementals.
Elementals are described as sentient beings that can possess bodies made of one of the 4 basic elements that make up the prime material plane. Air, earth, fire, or water.
Okay. Done. Episode's done.
Episode's done.
Have they ever lived in harmony?
They used to. And then the fire elementals attack.
We couldn't get through one. We couldn't get through my first paragraph of notes.
Well, you know.
Of all episodes, this is definitely the one that
should
have
and again,
reference.
Like, we have a quota to meet, and we might as well meet it early in the episode.
That's fair. So, like a lot of D&D creatures, they come from a real-world inspiration. A lot of this just comes from mythology in general. Almost every mythology has some concept of the 4 elements.
And also, elements. Specifically, elemental beings, this is probably where the anime comes in, but every piece of media, like every video game has just like a random
element,
air, earth, fire, water, elemental, like enemy.
And part of this is based on the medieval understanding of elements as being the 4 building blocks of all of nature.
Ooh.
So, elementals' more modern origins, like the elementals themselves in the real world, began during the European Renaissance. I mean, you kind of would have thought like ancient Greece or something like that. No, medieval or European Renaissance, particularly the works of Paracelsus, a Swiss philosopher and alchemist.
Fuck yeah.
Now, Paracelsus, you think it sounds like a Roman name?
No, so it's Swiss, apparently.
To begin... Paracelsus chose or was given, depending on the account, the name Paracelsus because he was beside or beyond Celsus, who was a famous Roman philosopher. Now, whether he's full of himself or his followers, because he had a lot of them, really liked him, is unknown.
That's like kind of a huge dick energy, though.
But
I mean, yes,
Paracelsus
so full of himself.
Was originally named Philippus Aurelius Theophratus Bombastus von Hohenheim.
Okay.
What?
I see where the anime has entered the chat.
So, quick sidebar, and then back to the relevant stuff, because I know Lewin won't let me just go past this.
Nope, there's definitely a face being made.
I recognize Van Hohenheim.
Obviously.
A lot of our listeners, I know you nerds, recognize Van Hohenheim. Van Hohenheim is the name of the father from Full Metal Alchemist. Not to give too many spoilers for an over 10-year-old anime and a nearly 20-year-old manga, but Van Hohenheim was originally a nameless slave who gave some of his blood to an alchemical experiment. The alchemical experiment in thanks gave him the name Theophratus Bombastus von Hohenheim.
Yeah.
He decided that it was too long and just went by Van Hohenheim, or von Hohenheim.
That is insanely cool.
And if you don't know that backstory, then you've only watched the 2003 anime and you need to watch Brotherhood.
Sure.
Wow. Way to just call out our listeners.
Also, I went through...
Our listeners, our Travis.
Also that, I have not seen Brotherhood.
Okay, guys, we're going to take our ad break early. We're going to watch the entirety
so much to do.
Of Fullmetal Alchemist Brotherhood.
No.
Watch
so,
Brotherhood.
It's a really cool nod in general to Paracelsus, who is considered the father of Renaissance alchemy and inspired a whole movement. Anyway, Paracelsus wrote a book on elementals called A Book on Nymphs, Sylphs, Pygmies, and Salamanders, and Other Spirits.
Nice. Dude.
These were the elementals, mythological beings as belonging to one of the four elements, described as creatures that are outside the cognizance of the light of nature, how they are to be understood, and what marvelous works God has created. It was kind of an intertwining of traditional Christian beliefs and the mythologies that really inspired the European Renaissance.
Yeah.
Hmm.
The four elementals are then split into Nymphs, or Undine in Latin, which are water elementals, Sylphs, or Sylvestris, which are air elementals, Pygmies, or Gnomes, in Latin,
my boys,
as earth elementals, and Salamanders, Lacanus, as fire elementals. So yes, that's right. In real-world Western mythology, gnomes were originally earth elementals.
Yeah, my boys.
They were created by Paracelsus, based on the Greek myths of the Pygmy.
What? Oh. I thought you meant like not the concept of them, but with the
physicality,
the physicality and the conceit of it. And I was like, wait, I thought they were made by God.
Nope. Wait, he used alchemy to make gnomes. Me, if I knew alchemy,
right? You, if alchemy was real.
So there were just so many rabbit holes to go down this.
That is amazing.
In addition to being the father of Renaissance alchemy, the father of toxicology, I am naming him, officially, the ancestor of D&D.
Yes, I agree to this vote.
And also a very prominent state alchemist.
Yes.
I mean, Von Hohenheim wasn't a... Watch Brotherhood.
Just watch Brotherhood.
Can we just talk about Full Metal Alchemist?
No. This is... Okay. I wanted to start a Paracelsus podcast, but I'm not going to.
Can we make an anime podcast? Where we just talk about Fullmetal Alchemist and no other anime?
No.
No.
Okay.
So, as for the elementals themselves, Paracelsus regarded them not so much as spirits, but as these beings between creatures and spirits. Generally kind of invisible, but having physical and commonly humanoid bodies, eating, sleeping, wearing clothes. Relatively similar in size, except for in the case of gnomes,
which are much smaller.
Much smaller. Sylphs are the closest to humans in concept, and they move like humans. But the main thing that Paracelsus believed, he did believe it, but he was more interested in selling his belief in this book, not like literally, but like trying to get other people to believe this thing.
Mm-hmm.
Paracelsus was trying to sell the idea that elementals were... So Paracelsus believed that human beings were composed of three parts. An elemental body, a sidereal spirit. I don't think I'm pronouncing that right, but we'll go on. And an immortal divine soul. Elementals lacked the last part, but could gain it through marriage or children with a human. Anyway.
Oh, he was a pervert.
He was a little bit of a
pervert.
Oh. It was the Renaissance. They were
I was
going
to say, to be fair, back in the Renaissance, the whole marrying a child thing was...
Oh, no, not marrying a child. They could have a child.
Oh.
He was just really into the marriage and offspring.
Okay, see, I like...
No, not a full... He wasn't that much of a pervert.
I combined both of those things in my head at once.
Basically, but... he was... talking about Crete and Genasi, except not with those words. Anyways, this is not a Paracelsus and Elemental podcast. This is a D&D podcast.
Yes.
But at its core, that's how the Elementals kind of began.
I like it.
Elementals were first introduced in the very first D&D book. We're talking White Box and all.
Damn.
And they were expanded on in the Monster Manual. They're described as strong but relatively stupid beings composed of their native element, water, air, earth, and fire. They can be conjured using a summon elemental spell, but only once per day per elemental type. As elementals are stupid and resent being summoned, the conjuring party must concentrate upon controlling the creature. Failure to do so will attack in the elemental, turning upon the summoner 75% of the time and attacking, or 25% of the time it does not turn and just immediately goes back to its plane.
Huh.
Weird.
Yeah. More powerful and intelligent elementals exist on the elemental plane, though neither the White Box nor the Monster Manual details how to summon them. Monster Manual 2 details para-elemental planes and the para-elementals on them, as well as quasi-elemental planes and the quasi-elemental natives there. I'll get to that in a bit.
Like, there's a lot of information going on here, isn't there?
There is.
Okay.
So like a lot of other creatures, they're expanded on quite a bit in second edition, particularly the Planescape setting. I have a love-hate relationship with Planescape. I love all the in-depth, complex lore that Planescape has given us and how utterly detailed it is. And I hate that it means that I could do an episode on each individual plane and each individual elemental. I am not going to do that, just so that we're clear. Just know that a lot of info comes from Planescape and it is super summarized.
Gotcha. Good to know. And from Planescape, I mean, I'm not surprised.
Let's go on a quick refresher of the inner planes, which are the elemental planes for the most part. We have the air, earth, fire, and water planes. Planes basically comprise nearly entirely of that element. Between each elemental plane is a para-elemental plane, which is an intermediary area where the planes mingle and... say that five times fast. But the planes mingle there and create elemental alloys. Air and water create ice. Earth and fire create magma. Water and earth create ooze. And fire and air create smoke.
Ooze.
Then at the center of all that, we have the energy planes, a positive energy plane and a negative energy plane. The positive energy plane is a empty void that is said to give life to the entire universe, though it itself is devoid of physical matter. It's just charged with positive energy. The positive energy is said to quickly overwhelm any creature there, annihilating it entirely. The negative energy plane is also an empty void, but it hungers to devour all life and matter, especially those that enter it.
Dang.
The negative energy plane is said to be the source of the undead, because it's a constant drain.
Okay, yeah.
Yeah.
Okay, following.
So between the energy planes and elemental planes are the quasi-elemental planes. Positive energy plane combines with each different elemental plane to create vivid and dynamic realms of energetic qualities. So you combine air with the positive to get lightning. You combine water and you get steam. You combine earth and you get minerals. And you combine fire and you get radiance.
Okay.
Yes.
On the other side, the negative energy plane combines the elemental planes to create grim places that break down matter, allow undead and tortured spirits to run amok. So you combine negative energy into air and you get vacuum. Combine water, you get salt. Combine earth, you get dust. Combine fire and you get ash.
That's actually where I'm from, is the quasi-elemental plane of water.
It would actually be called the quasi-elemental plane of salt. I'm not joking.
Okay. Also, I looked it up. The word sidereal apparently means relating to the stars. So a sidereal spirit is basically, I couldn't
find a spiritual body.
Yeah. It's like, and apparently it's hotly debated if that's the kind of astrology that we should be using. But, you know, apparently it has something to do with the stars, which, I mean, let's be real. Like, he was a Renaissance alchemist, so he was probably into astrology too.
Oh, yeah.
Yeah, I mean.
So that's what that is, I guess. It's just a celestial spirit.
Okay.
Interesting.
So each plane has an opposite and parallel. This means that fire and water are opposites, obviously.
Naturally.
Air and earth are opposites. But what exists in one form on one exists in another on the other. The example given is that if you find a fire bat on the fire plane, a water bat exists on the water plane and the earth plane and the air plane.
Okay.
Well, I mean, the water, it'll be an earth bat and an earth plane and an air bat. That's just a bat. Seriously, it gave this example, but that's just a bat.
Well,
they should have thought about that.
No.
I know.
No, it's just a bat.
It's just a bat.
I was going to say, well, no, but.
No, I think it's just a bat.
I know.
It's just a bat.
So, Planescape immediately contradicts the Monster Manual, and I love it.
Dang.
Yeah.
It mentions that prime inhabitants think the elementals are mindless brutes, but when they're on their own home planes, they're intelligent beings with a culture and society.
Fuck yeah.
Elementals organize into tribal bands led by one member, and the tribe functions much like a family with fierce loyalty and affection. Elementals don't reproduce with each other, so these tribes really are their family units.
Dang.
So elementals are usually true neutral, though some are influenced towards good or evil, about 10%. An elemental influenced by law or chaos will just straight up become a different type of elemental sort of being.
Huh.
This is incredibly rare, so rare it did not even give me a percentage.
Interesting.
Wow.
Yeah.
So just a straight up elemental is always neutral.
Almost. It's either always, it's always neutral for sure. But it can sometimes be...
Oh, it's good or evil. But yeah. If it's too far, law or chaos.
It becomes something else.
Okay, gotcha. I misheard. Yeah.
So,
I did that annoying thing where I acted like they were the same thing. Then I criticize other people for doing. Anyway.
Air elementals can be conjured in any area of open air where gusts of wind are present. Common air elementals appear as sort of this amorphous shifting cloud. They rarely speak, but their language, which is called Auron, can be heard in the high-pitched shriek of a tornado or like a low moan of a storm.
Tornadoes don't sound like that.
I mean, they kind of do. I mean, they sound a little bit like a jet engine.
I mean, a little bit.
I wouldn't
really call it a shriek.
Yeah, I wouldn't necessarily call it a high-pitched shriek, but...
Fair.
But I do get what it's talking about. It's talking about, like, the wind, probably, that's howling. Whipping around everything else.
I'm pretty sure all three of the people here have been nearby a tornado when it came by.
I wonder why.
Twice.
Okay. Sizes varied from 16 feet tall all the way to the powerful 40 to 80 feet tall.
Jesus. Oh,
that's a big boy.
40 to 80 feet tall.
That's a big boy.
They weighed from like 1 to 12 pounds, and I have to guess that most of that is just debris and the force of their gusts.
Yeah, it's like
this
air on its own doesn't really...
No.
It's like this 80 foot tall cloud, and you can just kind of pick it up.
Legitimately, yeah. God. Like, literally, my weighted blanket's heavier than that.
Yeah.
Yeah.
You know, I will make a guess that the weighted blanket is easier to pick up, though.
Probably.
Yeah, it doesn't fight back.
Exactly.
Air elementals are not nearly as tangible on the prime plane as they are on their own, and can strike opponents with a focused block of air, with a focused blast of air, like a giant invisible fist.
Dang.
Good Lord.
Do you ever just get punched by the air? Actually, sometimes, yeah. We live in a hall, like sometimes.
So this whole house got punched by the air. I'm so sorry.
Oh. No, Travis's house got, like, punted by the air.
It did. Right over this a tree and rolled into the pasture.
This pitch ain't empty.
It was empty of people.
It was empty of people.
As of 5th edition, this is portrayed as two slam attacks that do 2d8 plus 5 bludgeoning damage.
That's quite a bit of bludgeoning damage.
Yeah. They also have the unique and powerful ability Whirlwind, She's been adopted across editions, still named Whirlwind. Each creature in the elemental space must make a DC 13 strength saving throw. On a failure, the target takes 3d8 plus 2 bludgeoning damage and is flung up to 20 feet away from the elemental in a random direction and knocked prone.
I like that it's random.
Jesus.
If a thrown target strikes an object, such as a wall or a floor, the target takes another 1d6 bludgeoning damage for every 10 feet it was thrown. If the target is thrown at another creature, that creature must succeed on a DC 13 dexterity saving throw or take the same damage and be
thrown. I'm going to hit this motherfucker with another motherfucker.
Okay, but can I just say, is there any scenario where you wouldn't be at least hitting a floor?
In the elemental plane of air.
Yeah, true.
Or around water.
You just keep going.
Okay. That's fair. That, yeah. You just get thrown into the water, but anywhere else. Floor.
The air elemental can also enter a hostile space and stop there. It can move a space move through a space as narrow as 1 inch without squeezing.
I love how it says without squeezing.
That comes up a lot, actually.
Why does it?
And I've seen it come up a few times. And I'm just like, for some of these things, why would it need to squeeze?
It's just making sure you know.
I'm wondering, how does it squeeze?
It probably doesn't. I'm going to guess that they had a template for this ability.
And they just didn't have a better word for it, maybe.
Yes.
Because, like, I understand what happens. Like,
condensing.
Like, I mean, musculature-wise, whenever a human squeezes something.
Well, it is made of air, so, like, you can just kind of...
But that's not squeezing.
Then what is it?
Compressing? I don't know.
Is compressing for air not the same thing as squeezing for people? I don't know. I'm asking questions.
I don't have the. I think I just don't like the word squeezing in this context.
Well, get ready. There's more.
I can always
like if it had to squeeze. If it had to squeeze, what would it have to do? Roll a squeeze check? Like anyway, I'm too worked up about this. I'm too caught up on this.
So earth elementals can be conjured in any area of earth or stone. This type of common elemental appears on the prime material plane as a very large humanoid made of whatever types of dirt, stones, or precious metals and gems it was conjured from.
Nice.
It has a cold, expressionless face and two eyes that sparkle like brilliant, multifaceted gems.
Nice.
It has a mouth-like opening in its face, though an earth elemental rarely speak on the prime, even in their own language, which is called Terran. Their voices can be heard in the silence of deep tunnels, the rumblings of earthquakes and the grinding of stone on stone.
Dang. That admittedly does sound a little bit cooler than the air elemental speaking.
Listen.
Yeah.
I'm just saying, no shade at the air elementals, just stone's got you beat currently.
Earth elementals travel very slowly, but they're relentless in the fulfillment of their appointed tasks. An earth elemental can travel through solid ground or stone with no penalty to movement or dexterity. However, these elementals cannot travel through water. They must either go around the body of water in their path or go under it by traveling in the ground.
Hmm. Beautiful.
They prefer to move straight forward, though, so
yep, I mean,
more than likely go underground.
That makes sense, kind of given their...
nature?
Yeah.
So, sorry, sidebar, real quick. As far as the rules of squeezing goes, it's actually just when a creature has to spend one extra foot of movement for every foot it moves through a space smaller than it.
Hmm. You know, I feel like every episode, one of us, most often me, asks an asinine question that D&D actually provides an answer to. And that's just something I love about D&D.
It is a rule in the rule set, so.
teach me the rules for squeezing.
So, Earth
should have ran that one again. Sorry.
Varied greatly in size as well, from 4 to 40 feet tall, and they could weigh anywhere between 80,000 and 60,000 pounds.
Dang. So the heaviest air elemental is quite a bit lighter than the lightest earth elemental.
Yeah.
Dang.
That is also a very wide range of weight.
Yeah.
So earth elementals will always try to fight on the ground and can destroy foundations and structures quickly. This translates to a slam that in 2nd edition does 48 damage. In 5th edition, it's changed to the same 2 slams as the air elemental, doing 2d8 plus 5 bludgeoning damage and doing double damage on objects and structures.
I would like to note
they are siege weapons.
That for the 2nd edition, yes. Taylor said 4d8, not 48. SN 4d8.
Yes, sorry, 4d8.
Which cannot add up to 48. It just does 48 damage, just like straight up. It's like, hey, don't worry about rolling dice. It just does 48 damage.
Get squished.
Their thing about moving through ground or stone without penalty is their ability to burrow through non-magical unworked earth and stone.
Nice.
Next up are the fire elementals.
Yes.
Fire elementals can be conjured in any area containing a large open flame. To provide a fire elemental with an adequate shell of prime material flame, a fire built to house an elemental should have a diameter of at least 6 feet and reach a minimum of 4 feet in the air.
That's a pretty big fire.
That's easy.
I mean, it's not difficult, but I feel like in comparison to the size of a human, that's a pretty big fire.
I mean, it's a big fire, but
like, you couldn't make it from like a torch.
No. On the prime material plane, a fire elemental appears as a tall sheet of flame. The fire elemental will always appear to have two arm-like appendages, one on each side of its body. These arms seem to flicker back into the creature's flaming body, only to spring out from its side seconds later. The only facial features of a fire elemental are two large glowing patches of brilliant blue fire, which seem to function as eyes for the elemental.
Ooh, yes.
Like all common elementals, fire elementals rarely speak on the prime material plane, though their voices can be heard in the crackle and hiss of a large fire in their own language, which is Ignan.
Nice. I feel like you should be able to make like a calcifer out of like a torch. Like that should be sufficient for a calcifer. I feel like legally you should be able to make a calcifer. Anyway.
Fire elementals were about 40 to 40 feet tall and weighed between 1 to 12 pounds.
So that's just about as heavy as an air.
Yeah, but you, as an air.
But it's harder, I would say, to pick up a fire elemental.
On account of the flames.
On account of the hell burning.
Actually, we'll talk about that in just a moment.
That feeling when you have to put on like a movie, like flame suit to hug your fire elemental friend.
Yes.
I don't know why I thought of that before, like, actual firefighter equipment, but anyway.
I mean, even their stuff isn't
necessarily
like 100% flame proof.
Yeah.
They don't go up and hug the fire.
No, at least they shouldn't.
But you could hug a fire elemental. You could want to hug a fire elemental.
Fair. Fire elementals strongly resent being summoned and fiercely attack their enemies, burning everything in its path.
Nice.
Yep.
In second edition, it lashes out with constantly moving limbs, doing 3 to 24 points of damage. Any flammable object struck by the fire elemental must save versus magical fire at -2 or immediately begin to burn.
Which this would also include clothing.
Yes.
I would imagine, because a lot of clothing is flammable.
In fifth edition, this translates to 2 touch attacks dealing 2d6 plus 3 fire damage. It's a target is a creature or a flammable object, it ignites.
A creature. Oh no.
Until a creature takes an action to douse the fire, the target takes 1d10 fire damage at the start of each of its turns.
Travis, I have a DM question. Is stop, drop, and roll a standard action or a full round action?
That would be a full round action.
Okay, gotcha.
It also features a fire form, wherein the elemental can move through a space as narrow as 1 inch wide without squeezing, and if a creature touches it or hits the elemental with a melee attack while within 5 feet, it takes 1d10 fire damage.
Oh my god.
If the elemental stops on top of the creature, it continues to burn. Until someone takes action to douse the fire, the creature takes 1d10 fire damage at the start of each turn.
I feel like I could maybe make the claim that I think objectively these are the most dangerous type of common elemental.
Just wait.
I would agree. Also, how do you douse the fire when there is literally a being of fire standing on top of you?
You leave its threat range. You would accrue an attack of opportunity unless you happen to use disengage.
Or some kind of,
because this is fifth edition.
Yeah. Or so you have some kind of other thing that you can.
Yeah, but you would have to disengage or what have you.
And then your friend would have to pour water on you.
Or stop, drop, and roll, I guess. Or just jump into a lake.
See, now all I'm picturing, I'm just gonna throw this out there, is Drella running up and like kicking Nyxis across the floor to do both a movement and a stop, drop, and roll on her at the same time.
And also, DM, if I wanted to do that, would that count?
Yes.
And also to fucking murder her. Because I feel like Drell's kicks would do a lot of damage with her legs that can carry her like 120 feet per round. Listen, I had this BDS workout. Oh,
you really did.
So you put the fire out, but then you go over and check on her, and it's like, okay, guys, I have good news and bad news. The good news is she's not on fire anymore. The bad news is she's dead from blunt force trauma.
Did she kill our necromancer? We can't bring her back.
Damn it. We killed the necromancer.
So... water elementals,
right?
They can be conjured in any area containing a large amount of water or watery liquid. Any kind of watery liquid.
Wine.
Yeah, you can wine make a wine elemental.
Yeah, so you could make a wine elemental. That would be interesting.
That was
a
the
mead elemental.
But you need at least 1,000 cubic feet of liquid to create the shell for the water elemental.
I could just go find any white woman who shills MLM products on Facebook. She can hook me up.
So usually a large pool serves this purpose, but several kegs of wine or ale will do just as well.
Or you could just get a keg of wine and...
So the water elemental appears on the prime material plane as a high crested wave. I have a wonderful water elemental that I painted myself.
Oh, he's beautiful. Yes, I remember him, our friend.
He's pretty.
The elemental's arms appear as smaller waves, one thrust out on each side of its main body. The arms ebb and flow like waves, growing longer or shorter as the elemental moves. Two orbs of deep green peer out from the front of the wave that serve as the elemental's eyes. Like all other common elementals, they rarely speak on the prime plane, but their voices can be heard in the crashing of waves on rocky shores and the howl of an ocean gale. Their language is called Aquin.
Makes sense.
Yeah.
Yeah. Finally, their height varies from 4 to 10 feet, and they weigh in from 34 pounds to 24,000 pounds.
Okay, fair, but I've seen waves taller than 10 feet.
Oh, that's supposed to say 40. I can't believe I said 4 to 10. That's supposed to say 40.
Oh, okay, good. Okay, that's acceptable.
40 to 40, weighing 24,000 pounds.
That's a big boy.
Ooh.
Water elementals prefer to fight in a large body of water because they can constantly disappear and reappear at will.
Oh, like a Vaporeon.
Yeah. Jesus. And second edition enlashes that with like huge wave-like arms that do 5 to 30 points of damage.
Did you ever get slapped by the water?
Yes.
Yeah.
Water elementals can also overturn small ships and destroy others over an attack.
Wow. Nice.
Don't piss off a water elemental.
If you're in the water.
If you're in the desert, you're probably fine.
Yeah.
In fifth edition, this is two slam attacks doing 2d8 plus 4 bludgeoning damage. And the special attack, Whelm.
Oh, yeah.
Each creature in the elemental space must make a DC 15 strength saving throw. On failure, the target takes 2d8 plus 4 bludgeoning damage. If it is large or smaller, it is also grappled, escape DC 14. Until this grapple ends, the target is restrained and unable to breathe water.
Yep.
If the saving throw is successful, the target is pushed out of the elemental space.
Wow, that attack sounds really overwhelming.
Yep, I'm done.
So,
all right, guys, good episode.
The elemental can grab one large creature or up to two medium or smaller creatures at one time. At the start of each of the elemental's turns, each target grappled by it takes 2d8 plus 4 bludgeoning damage. A creature within 5 feet of the elemental can pull a creature or object out of it by taking an action to make a DC 14 strength check and succeeding.
But if you fail, you do nothing.
And slowly die.
And you waste your action.
Yeah.
Drowning to death.
Which I gotta say is probably in my top 10... ways I don't want to die the most.
Number one way I would rather not die.
Same, probably. I don't know. It's up there for me. I'm not sure what my least favorite.
All right, guys, let's rank the elementals based on which one we would want to have kill us the least. Mine would probably be an earth elemental because the idea of being buried alive is terrifying to me.
You probably wouldn't be alive. You'd probably get bludgeoned to death first. Blunt force trauma.
Okay, fine. Then I would want an air elemental to kill me.
Yeah.
An air elemental, pardon.
In the rankings from the least way I would like to die would be water, earth, fire, and then air.
There are so many more elementals coming up that I'm not going to rank them yet.
Oh.
Okay. Okay, for the record, I'm associating earth elementals with being buried alive, and that idea is terrifying to me. In case anyone wants to know how to not kill me.
Well, we can ponder on that.
Okay.
During our ad break.
To the break. Okay, but drowning? No, I don't want to drown either.
Hey, everybody. Thank you guys so much for listening to the elemental episode. I mean, that's what it is.
All of the elementals.
Not all.
Every single one of them. We will be here for like a week.
Listen, it's going to be.
No.
No, I'm not doing it.
I'm not.
You can't make me do it.
I'm not. I mean, I made the joke, but I don't want to do it either.
But you do know what I do want?
What? What do you want?
More dice. Always.
Same.
Always more dice. Or trays. Or towers. Or
dice-related accessories. Sharp dice.
My birthday's coming up next month. And you know what I want? Is.
Dice?
Probably. I mean, I don't explicitly want dice, but
like
I don't not explicitly want dice.
But you always want dice.
Exactly.
It's a constant state of need.
And because I understand that money is always tight, I am totally okay with you using offer code DUNGEONPEDIA for 10% off your entire order.
By the way, Taylor's talking to us. She's not expecting you, our listeners.
Oh, yeah, no. Presence. No.
If you do, send them to P.O. Box. We don't have a P.O. Box.
Technically, we do.
Technically, we do.
We don't have a P.O. box to receive things.
Yeah, no.
Unless
it's like mail, like an envelope.
Taylor is directing you guys to use offer code DUNGEONPEDIA for 10% off, but not on a birthday gift for her.
Mm-hmm.
On a birthday gift for you,
yeah,
if you're a fellow Aquarius.
That's just for you gift.
Yeah.
Just for you gift.
Congratulations on making it through the first 2 weeks of 2021.
Just congratulations on making a gift. But you can get dice at metallicdicegames.com. You can get all sorts of things at metallicdicegames.com.
And when you get those things, you can use offer code DUNGEONPEDIA for 10% off your entire order. How many times have we said that?
A lot, but that's okay. They know.
We'll keep saying.
We're here to say, we just want to make sure you know.
We do, of course, still have our Patreon if you'd like to just support us directly there. It's just DUNGEONPEDIA. Anything is great, but obviously you are not obligated to do so.
Yeah,
of course.
Thank you just for listening.
Don't forget to follow us on our Twitter and our Instagram, which is at DUNGEONPEDIA. If you have any suggestions or comments or questions on anything, really, you can email us at dungeonpedia.podcast@gmail.com.
You can also subscribe to us on whatever platform you use to listen to get notifications as soon as we post our new episodes. And if those platforms allow, we would appreciate it if you would leave us a rating or a review or both. They're very helpful.
They are.
Having us stand out. Even more importantly than that, tell your friends. Tell your family who like fire or water.
Or earth.
Or air. Or any combination of those, turns out.
Yes, apparently. If they like
Full
salt.
Metal Alchemist.
Yeah, tell your friends who like Full Metal Alchemist.
They might be a little confused, but they'll
get it. They'll get it pretty early.
Really like Paracelsus, and they want to know what he hath wrought upon the world.
Right? Or they like alchemy.
Honestly, he has to like Paracelsus if he likes alchemy.
Honestly, our listener base, you probably have a friend who likes at least one of those things. Just
there's a lot of things here.
I'm casting aspersions on our listener base, but I don't think I'm wrong. So
I also don't think you're wrong.
And Alexander Nakarada is also not wrong.
He was definitely not wrong when he made our theme song Blacksmith.
No, he was not. So thank you, Alexander Nakarada, for the lovely, lovely Blacksmith theme song.
Thank you.
And thank you, dear listener, for listening to our episode up to this point. And I think with that, we'll reward you by going back to one of the outer planes.
Inner planes.
Oh, damn it. Lilith is very excited to hear about the elementals, by the way.
She is, apparently. Well, don't worry,
don't
guys.
Mind her.
She's fine.
She's
not being mistreated.
She's just needy.
She's very needy.
She's just having a needy day.
How dare she be left alone for like an hour? How dare.
So we're going to move on to the para-elementals.
Oh, boy.
Okay.
So they are all regarded as slightly less powerful than the elementals, but exhibit dual characteristics of their makeup. Para-elementals are considered to be low lower intelligence creatures and prefer to speak in their own languages, i.e. the two elemental languages of their makeup.
Oh, cool.
Despite this, their intelligence ranges from 5 to 14, hmm. which is, like, literally humanoid.
Yeah, that's, like, average.
Yeah.
That's, like, yeah, that's anywhere from, for example, the Pathfinder flail snails have an intelligence of 5, and they have their own, and they're like fucking Zen poets.
Yeah.
So they run the gamut from Zen poet snails to moderately intelligent.
I mean, I guess that is still also considered lower intelligence creatures, though, because I mean, if you ran into a human that had an intelligence of like 6 or 7, you would think, yeah, they're a bit on the lower end.
Yeah. Well, but I mean, to be fair, anything, I love how it's like lower than, or it's like 10 is like average person. And then everyone acts like 9 is like the dumbest fucker alive.
Yeah.
Anyway.
So Icefire elementals are cold, tall humanoids made from translucent white icy crystals covered in patches of ice.
Ooh, that sounds really cool.
They have these piercing blue eyes and deep sockets. They're covered head to toe in icicles.
Oh, don't touch.
Ice elementals have a freezing touch that does 3d8 points of damage. Don't worry, they'll touch you.
I don't want them to touch me.
All creatures within 10 feet take 1d4 cold damage from its cold aura, and it can freeze 100 square feet of liquid to a depth of 6 inches.
Oh my god.
It changes a bit in 3rd edition, adopting the range and save requirement by the size of the para elemental. And this is true for all of the para elementals.
Gotcha.
They range from 4 to 40 feet tall. And 32 to 22,000 pounds.
That's a fucking glacier-sized para-elemental there.
You know, I kind of would have thought that an ice elemental would end up weighing more than, like, the water ones.
Water's pretty heavy.
Well, I know exactly what it is. Water's the only thing that condenses as it freezes, isn't it?
And
we know it's the opposite.
Water expands.
So it's made up out of less water to reach 40 feet.
That makes sense.
Yeah. They're also kind of small and bony and not like an actual full puck.
Which is bigger, 40 feet of water or 40 feet of ice?
A lot of ice para elementals serve Cryonax, who is a prince of elemental evil, which is another story for another time. It is part of a 5e adventure module released in 2015 called Princes of the Apocalypse.
I prefer Horsemen of the Apocalypse, but whatever.
These are fancier. Anyway, the majority serve themselves and minor lords of ice, simply ignoring the evil, just chilling in their plane.
Chilling?
Chilling.
Was that intentional? Okay, yeah, I just wanted to check and make sure that was intentional.
Ice para elementals keep to themselves, and strife among them is rare. They subsist on consuming sources of heat lesser than them and converting it into cold.
Nice.
Yeah.
Huh. So they feed off of heat, but they transfer the heat into cold.
It's more accurate to say they sap the heat from everything.
Right.
Yeah.
Huh. Interesting.
So next up are the magma para-elementals.
Nice.
Which are earth and fire. They resemble a huge, stocky humanoid from the waist up, but the lower portion is nothing but an amorphous mass of molten stone.
Oh, sick.
Most of the upper body is black rock. Or, in other depictions, it's composed almost entirely of lava, which resembles a hulking humanoid like an earth elemental.
Holy shit.
Nice.
Either way, two glowing embers sit where the eye should be, and the mouth is like this gaping maw of fire.
Yes. So it's like a colossal.
Pretty much, yeah. Magma para elementals love to charge into melee combat.
Oh, I got another prediction. Touching one of these is also bad.
Those grappled by a magma para elemental or hit by its slam must succeed on a reflex saving throw or catch fire.
Okay, yes, touching bad.
Touching very bad.
The fire burns for 1d4 rounds.
Touching very bad.
A burning creature can take a move equivalent action to put the flame out. Yeah.
Stop, drop, and roll. Always remember, kids, stop, drop, and roll.
Creatures hitting a magma para elemental with natural weapons or unarmed attacks must make the same save.
See, that's what I think is tough about these and, like, the fire elementals is, like, you can't hit them.
You can. It's just going to have to be with, like, spells and ranged.
Yeah, but, like,
or magical weapons.
Yeah, but, like,
or magical.
Who cares about spells or ranged or magical weapons?
A lot of people.
Us.
Fucking
we've all played. All played.
I only know barbarian. I only know hit things.
So, Matt, they're about 4 to 40 feet tall and weigh
80 to 60,000 pounds.
Holy yes. shit! That's just the. I'm imagining the volcano Titan from the Disney Hercules film.
Yes. Right, and I was imagining the ice one for the ice.
Oh, now elementals. I'm just thinking about Hercules.
Magma para-elementals travel in packs of small communities with no real leader. They're harmonious within their groups, but distrustful of outsiders. This is really cute. They enjoy melting solid objects for fun and Same. Sometimes to sustain themselves as well.
Oh, and before those solid objects are people.
No,
just literally objects. Okay, gotcha. Cool.
Now, not so much the sustaining myself, but I definitely enjoy melting things for fun.
I mean,
it should be noted. I mean,
you.
Travis is literally a blacksmith.
You melt. Yeah. You also melt cheese. And use it to sustain yourself.
This is true.
So sometimes that is.
Sometimes I do melt things to sustain myself.
Yeah, I am not a pyromaniac that just goes around setting random things on fire.
He set specific things on fire.
Yeah.
In a forge. Ooze paramentals slither and crawl through their home plane on the elemental plane of ooze.
Ooze. Ooh. And that's
which they call
earth and fire?
Earth and
water. Or earth and water, excuse me.
An ooze para-elemental generally takes the form of a dark brown torso, head, and writhing tendrils rising from a pool of muck.
Oh my god. I like it. The visual of that is funny.
Writhing.
As the pool flows across the landscape, the para-elemental moves. The para-elemental moves. It has to say that as many times as I have.
Para-elemental. Para-elemental.
It has these gaping black indentations where its eyes and mouth would be.
Oh, that's actually had one. Probably kind of horrifying to
behold. I kind of picture Coco from Animal Crossing.
Oh, okay, no, it's cute now. It's cute now.
Just
okay
with now. Writhing tentacles everywhere.
And made out of, like, mud.
Yeah.
She kind of is. Because she's a honey doll, okay, right?
Wet mud, not dried mud. So... Ooze para-elementals relish combat against most humanoid foes because their acid can melt weapons.
Oh, they have acid. Fuck yeah.
Oh, no.
And Ooze's para-elemental muck. And Ooze para-elemental. Ooze's muck is highly acidic and can rapidly dissolve organic material in metal.
So bad to touch.
Yes.
Okay.
Any melee hit deals acid damage.
Well, I want to touch the tentacles. Or do I want the tentacles to touch me?
No.
Oh. I don't because they're acidic.
Armor or clothing dissolves immediately and becomes useless unless it succeeds on a reflex save.
Oh, man.
A metal or wooden weapon that strikes an ooze para-elemental also dissolves immediately. If an ooze para-elemental successfully grapples an opponent, the opponent's armor must likewise make a reflex save at -4 penalty or dissolve into uselessness.
Okay, but how long does it take to dissolve the person?
It does 40 damage, acid damage per round.
So... Because, realistically, physically, if you were to get grappled by one of these things, it would just kind of eventually dissolve you.
I mean, unless you can get all of the ooze off, you have 40 hit points per 6 seconds.
Okay, I changed my mind. These guys are probably the most dangerous ones we've talked about so far.
Yeah.
Ooh, zowie, wowie.
4 to 40 feet tall. And 34 to 24,000 pounds.
I love 34 is such a weirdly specific number.
It is.
Not 33. 34.
35.
Not 30. 34. Not 30.
No, they just chose 34.
So, these para-elementals vie for control of their plane and despise the other non-para-elemental natives to their plane. They crush and eventually liquefy objects to gain their subsistence, which they have to absorb into themselves. It takes several hours.
I don't see how that's any different than what humans do.
Okay, well, they crush it with their bodies.
So do we. Our mouths. That's part of our bodies.
They sit on it. Smoke elementals.
I'm imagining them not, like, hugging it to themselves. They just, like, sit on it. That's funny.
Smoke elementals appear as a pillar of thick black smoke with red-hot cinder marks. For eyes.
Nice.
And, it has two massive arms with tenebrous, sickle-shaped claws that swipe at its foes.
Ooh.
It can fly through the air or drift very low to the ground like soot.
Is that a squeezing motion to do that? Or
probably. smoke para-elementals use their great speed to good effect in combat, flying circles around land-bound foes.
Oh, wait, can they? I'm going to let you finish.
They can engulf the opponents by moving on top of them. It fills the air around one opponent smaller than it is without provoking an attack of opportunity.
Oh,
the target
no.
must succeed on a fortitude save or inhale part of the creature.
Oh no!
Smoke inside the victim solidifies into a claw or talon, which begins to rip at the surrounding organs.
Holy shit!
Dealing double the para-elemental's claw damage automatically.
What the fuck?
What the fuck?
Oh!
The affected creature can attempt to a fortitude save each subsequent round to cop out the semi-vaporous menace.
Holy shit!
What the shit?
What?
Like all of its siblings, cousins, what have you, it is 4 to 40 feet tall and weighs about 1 to 12 pounds.
Holy shit!
Okay, nope. I'm gonna go ahead and move smoke paralimitals down to probably number 1.
That, my esophagus hurts.
Smoke para-elementals are divided into tiny kingdoms which are ruled by a powerful smoke king. Smoke para-elementals don't eat, they instead breathe, consuming air and exuding smoke. What?
Go ahead.
Pockets of air on the smoke plane function like an oasis in the desert.
Are they like nice at least? Are they like aggressive? Because I hope they're not aggressive.
They're all pretty neutral, honestly.
Okay, good. Because if those things were like...
I mean, their alignment is literally neutral.
Because if those things were like aggressive or evil, like...
We'd all be fucked.
Yeah.
That... Yeah.
Oh, that hurts my insides. Ugh.
Hmm.
Ugh.
Next up, we have the quasi-elementals.
Oh, joy.
Yes. They're less powerful than both elementals and para-elementals, being of both elemental planes and planes of pure energy. They're significantly smaller than their siblings, quote-unquote, with less variation in their sizes. And
okay, for some reason, the idea that as you move from true elementals to para-elementals to quasi-elementals, for some reason, the idea that they become less powerful does not jive.
It doesn't, and honestly,
because
I'm not going to get into all of their, like, numbers, but it also doesn't reflect very well in their numbers either.
Hmm.
I mean, I guess that, because like that doesn't make, if anything, it, I almost feel like the opposite would make sense. Like if they, if ones that, like these quasi-elementals that.
Like combining things gets you stronger things.
Yeah. Especially because they overlap with like the positive and negative energy planes.
True.
Also, the smoke elemental can literally go inside you and stab you on the inside. So like, if
nothing else, think about it this way. As for the elementals and the
quasi
in the regular elementals, mm-hmm. they're a lot larger,
I guess,
and you can do a lot more damage the bigger you are, and that's about it. That's all, the only defense I have,
I guess.
So quasi elementals are only featured in the first and second edition, unfortunately.
Oh, rip in pieces.
Lightning quasi elementals look a bit like small balls of lightning about 3 feet in diameter with bolts of electricity constantly arcing off of them towards the nearest conductor.
Oh, cute. I like that.
I like it.
They're what? Air and positive?
Yes. Lightning is air and positive energy, by the way. We're going to do positive energy first, then negative.
Now, can we do negative first? I always like to take the negative before I take the positive.
Too bad.
Oh.
Because damn. This is how I did the note.
Oh, damn. Okay. That was a joke, by the way.
They can carry themselves along these arcs, effectively teleporting,
ooh,
as per the spell,
oh, that's
up
fun.
To 60 yards away to any grounded or metallic object with a mass greater than 5 pounds.
Sick.
Each round, a quasi-elemental can teleport in this fashion in addition to physically moving at its normal rate.
Oh, so they do, like, float around?
Yeah.
But they can also, like, kind of do this jump.
Do the teleport, yeah.
Teleporting jump motion. Gotcha.
Virtually nothing is known about the life cycle of lightning quasi-elementals. It's still clear that they're the undisputed masters of their plane. Lightning quasi-elementals flock together in a huge display of electricity. Beyond these assemblies, they have no real organization or leadership. They're described as an alien... They're described as alien chaotic loners.
Same.
They're just balls of little lightning just... Zipping.
Vibing.
They're literally just vibing.
The description is literally, they're just vibing.
Vibing.
The earth plane and the positive energy plane combine to create the mineral quasi-elementals.
Are they crystals? Please tell me they're crystals.
They look like an earth elemental, but one made of precious stones and metals.
Fuck yeah!
It can, however, take other forms. It can mimic the basic shape of any other creature, though the new form is always made of sparkling minerals.
Holy shit.
Whoa.
An in-universe poet called them gem-studded dragons and multifaceted knights.
Well, I mean, they're actual gem dragons.
I know.
Has this poet never heard of actual gem dragons?
That's why they're gem-studded.
Yeah.
Oh, okay.
Yeah.
Freaking loser.
They're about 9 to 12 feet tall.
That's just not small.
No.
No, that really is not small.
Hey, I want a 9 foot tall sculpture of me made out of rubies. Can I hire a mineral quasi-elemental to do that for me?
Actually, we're going to kind of talk about that in a minute. Not exactly the making a sculpture, but like what you can get.
Okay, all right.
They're fairly warlike because they gather into bands and patrol the glittering caverns of their plane. This is because many outsiders think that the quasi-plane of mineral is just a treasure trove waiting to be plundered.
Well, now I feel ashamed.
No, it's okay. It's okay. No,
now, I feel ashamed.
The quasi-elementals despise creatures like the Zorn and Kurga that seek to devour precious minerals. But truth is, they're generally hostile to any intruder who doesn't offer a really good reason for being there. Your reason would be commissioning them.
Oh, yeah. No, I'm supporting artists. I'm supporting artists.
So when a mineral quasi-elemental is slain, its body becomes little more than uncut gems and valuable metal ore, approximately 200 gold pieces worth for each of the creature's hit dice.
Dang.
If a quasi-elemental dies on any other plane, it simply falls apart into gems and ore used to summon it in the first place. In other words, unless the creature stepped through a gate, its corpse probably won't yield anything its slayer didn't already have access to.
Hmm.
Interesting.
Yeah, fair.
And that's basically the thing. If you are summoning one, you have to have the stuff to kind of make it form.
Essentially.
Yeah.
So it's kind of like... You
can't summon a quasi-elemental
in a get-rich-quick scheme.
And, yeah.
Yeah, because you summon it and kill it, it just turns back into...
More gems.
Which you use to summon it.
So you would people would summon them to do something.
Right.
It's not just a get-rich-quick scheme.
Yeah. And at that point, it's probably just a lot easier to summon an earth elemental.
That reminds me of remember Infinite Chocolate?
Oh my god.
It's like infinite gemstones, but nobody's going to point out the fact that it just equals out. Remember Infinite Chocolate, Taylor?
That was a time. Anyway.
Taylor's going through the 5 stages of grief.
Radiance quasi-elementals resemble lightning quasi-elementals somewhat. That's because a radiance quasi-elemental appears to be a glowing ball of energy about 3 feet in diameter. But, unlike its lightning counterpart, it doesn't crackle chaotically with arcs of energy. Instead, it emits a steady and orderly glow, varied only by the intensity of the creature's continual smooth spinning.
Ooh, and then this is the positive fire quasi-elemental.
Yes.
Okay.
The glow is equivalent to a double strength continual light spell, though the quasi-elemental can dim the illumination if it chooses.
Beautiful.
Probably, yeah, very beautiful.
Oh, yeah, I'm certain.
Oh, yeah. Like
these light-based beings stick to small groups on their home plane. They rarely so much as move except to avoid other residents of the quasi-plane. The more intelligent radiant quasi-elementals are philosophers that remain in one position for eons in peaceful contemplation. However, if disturbed, they grow quite temperamental.
Me at my computer.
Quasi-elementals that care less for philosophy move about a good deal more on their plane as well as on others, carrying out errands or simply looking to feed.
What do they feed on? Light, I
imagine. Radiance. They just feed on light.
Huh.
Since their plane is such a safe haven for creatures like themselves, radiance quasi-elementals have little to fear from predators or other threats.
Huh. They're just...
Vibin'. They're also just vibin'.
They're just cute little balls of energy.
Uh-huh. So next up is the steam quasi-elementals, which are also known as mist quasi-elementals.
About to get hot in here.
These... it's the water and positive energy plane that creates them, and these vaporous beings look like large clouds of virtually transparent gas, getting up to 60 feet wide.
That is not smaller than other elementals.
No.
That is actually larger.
Their ghostly appearance should be a warning to even an idiot that the creatures are best left alone.
Aww.
Steam quasi elementals are said to slip their misty tendrils into all aspects of life on their home plane, where they're virtually impossible to detect. The most intelligent ones organize their lessers into spies and agents. They not only know everything that happens on the quasi plane of steam and other planes nearby, but they can try to control those events as well.
Damn.
They're dangerous creatures and they don't hesitate to attack when someone stands in their way or whenever it just serves their purpose.
Or when something just wanders, for lack of a better word, inside of them.
More frequently, they try to take intruders as slaves because their one limitation is the inability to manipulate objects.
Oh.
Well, then how do they... Is it... Did they, like, do the thing like, the smoke elementals do? Where they, like, get inside you and... Wow.
Presumably?
Controlled you at
that
point.
They didn't really describe. They just said...
They just make you inhale them and then they kind of...
Control you?
Move you around like Remy Ratatouille. I mean, probably not by pulling on your hair, but...
Maybe.
You know.
So, steam quasi-elementals absorb gases just as... steam quasi-elementals absorb gases to sustain themselves and reproduce simply by absorbing a great deal and then splitting in two.
Huh.
Yeah.
I mean, that...
That follows,
it,
but...
It tracks. Kind of cool. Just... They absorb blood and then...
I mean, isn't that what people do? No, they don't.
So now we finally have the negative quasi-elementals, which represent the disintegration of the original four elements.
Oh, that's a fun way to look at it.
The disintegration.
Yep. In the mostly lifeless expanse that is the quasi-plane of ash, the ash quasi-elemental embodies the slow fading of energy that has already consumed all it can.
Same.
An inanimate pile of ashes and cinders, the quasi-elemental form can form itself into crude shapes. A human-like being, a serpentine creature, and so on.
Ash snake.
6 feet tall.
Huh. Interesting.
Ash quasi-elementals rarely leave their home plane. The elemental plane of fire would prove lethal to them, and most other planes are either too hot, causing them harm, or too cold, offering no sources of warmth that they can drain. It's interesting to note that the elemental plane of fire is lethal to them because they're made from it. I mean, kind of. It's the combination of the fire and negative energy plane. They can only exist really in the negative
right between. Yeah. And, like, right between the
that
two.
That is kind of strange.
That's kind of sad. Weird. Like, weirdly.
It is weirdly sad. You're not wrong. Quasi-plane of ash holds a gigantic fortress made of cinders, a palace known as the Citadel of Former Flame. From here, a council of powerful, intelligent ash quasi-elementals plot and plan against their enemies from fire.
Oh, so they do not like the plan of fire.
Yeah, it didn't really give a lot of explanation as to why. Now, granted, it might if I went into did a detailed account of all the planes, but again, I'm not going to do that.
Yeah.
No, that...
No, I kind of... I feel like it almost is that they don't like inhabitants of the plane of fire, because I feel like almost maybe they view them... Because, like, it's kind of a sad state to live in, I would imagine.
Yeah.
So I feel like maybe they view things in the elemental plane of fire as almost like their creators. And so it's like they hate their creators. Or alternatively, it's like a sadder version of them just being jealous. Maybe. That's my take on it.
All of these creatures are very sad in one way or another. I'll admit that for the next four creatures, basically, including the ash creatures.
Oh, great. I love to be sad.
So they can't take direct action against anyone in fire because
obviously
they can't go there. They weave elaborate schemes that cause others to strike against their foes. And they feel that fire will eventually end and all that will be left is cold ash.
Yeah.
Which, I mean...
They're not wrong.
They're not wrong.
They're not incorrect.
That's what happens when fire is done. They live a strange existence. They fear what they crave because they crave warmth.
Right.
They heat, but too much will destroy them. But they're not born of any sort of biological reproductive process, but they kind of just emerge randomly from the ashes of the quasi-plane. So they don't really have, like, a lot going for them, to be
yeah.
honest.
It sounds like
they don't have much aim other than just continuing on.
I mean,
it is a pretty sad existence, though.
Yeah, that fucking sucks. No wonder they're all pissed off. That just fucking sucks.
If ash quasi-elementals embody the death of energy, then its dust counterpart embodies the death of matter.
Which is the earth and negative eldrin. What?
Yes.
Eldrin? Elemental negative energy. Eldrin.
Yes.
Mm-hmm.
Uh-huh. It revels in the obliteration of solid objects, especially the pulverization of worked or crafted materials. A dust quasi-elemental looks like a billowing dust cloud of dust with tiny eye-like pockets of swirling particles. It is also around 6 feet tall.
Nice.
Yeah. They're vengeful and destructive. They could almost be considered evil. Ultimately, of course, they must be seen as neutral, part of the multiverse, because rather than as they're not really doing it out of malice. It's just the only thing that they really know.
Yeah.
They are just relentless. They just consume and destroy. It seems that they'll stop at nothing to destroy anyone that does them harm, but really it's more about destroying anything that's in their path.
Yeah, because they're the destruction of, they're literally the breakdown of matter, so.
Yeah. The monster's affinity for destroying things that others have taken great pains to create seems a bit immoral, but it's not anything personal.
And it's not, like, destruction isn't evil, because as we discussed in, you know, a lot of different things, I'm particularly thinking of catastrophic dragons, like, destruction is a part of the cycle of life, so.
Exactly.
You know, it's not evil.
Dust quasi-elementals have no real organization, although they sometimes gather in leaderless groups, mobs, really, to roam about and wreak havoc. They don't willingly leave their home, but when they suddenly find themselves somewhere else, perhaps because of the summoning, they take no steps to return. They're simply content to break down matter wherever they happen to be.
Huh.
And I think that this is why they are definitely neutral.
They're kind of just like constantly on an autopilot, like, doesn't matter, they're like, just going to do this one thing.
They're just vibing. It's just bad vibes.
Because they literally feed upon destruction, dust quasi-elementals are best feared and avoided rather than dealt with. To make matters worse, the creatures are spontaneously created whenever great devastation occurs.
Awesome.
So their own actions tend to create more of their kind.
Awesome.
Jesus.
The natives of the quasi-plane of salt are these salt quasi-elementals.
Hello, my name's Lewin.
Which is from the combination of water and negative energy. They absorb moisture of any sort. So much like the ash, they are kind of the absence of water.
Okay, yeah.
Okay, actually, I'm kind of just realizing now that all of these are kind of the absence of their counterpart when combined with the negative energy. It just kind of occurred to me.
I feel like we said that, but didn't really absorb it earlier. Hey, listen, it took a while to really sink in, okay?
They're not as numerous as other things that are native to their plane of salt, but especially on the border between the salt and the elemental plane of water. They can take on other appearances, kind of like the other elementals do, the reptilian ones and stuff like that. But these salt beings are often resemble large, white, rime-encrusted lizards about 9 to 12 feet tall.
Holy shit. My new fursona. Galesona. It's just a salt lizard.
Giant salt lizard.
Just a pig salt lizard.
The salt quasi-elementals stick mostly to their own plane. Fact is, they're never going to join any crusade against the elemental plane of water because of the dangers they'd face by being near such a large volume of liquid. What happens when you put salt into water?
It dissolves, and then
dissolves.
You boil it to make a delicious pasta meal.
Mmm, delicious. They're more or less solitary creatures, and salt quasi-elements are content to wander their plane in absorbing water in small amounts. They don't have big ambitions like anyone else.
Like the other quasi-elementals.
Yeah. They're just salty. Like, I'm going to absorb as much moisture as possible. I will consume the moisture.
Same. Same.
It's interesting to note that while a salt quasi-elemental can drain the moisture from a facet, which is another native to the plane of water, the plane of salt, the process doesn't work in reverse. A facet can't absorb anything from a salt quasi-elemental. It just goes to show that the quasi-elemental is truly the embodiment of salt and dryness.
Because salt absorbs things.
Supposedly, a few high-up wizards figured out a way to imprison salt quasi-elementals in their laboratories to keep their spellbooks and delicate experiments dry.
Why can't they just hire them like I'm going to do for the mineral para-elementals? Okay.
Because wizards...
Hot take. A salt quasi-elemental wizard.
I like it.
I love it.
We're going to move on to the combination of the negative energy plane and the air elemental plane, which creates the quasi-elemental plane of vacuum.
So space.
Yes.
Okay.
And no.
Well, space is a vacuum, but it is not the vacuum.
Yes.
I mean, I think it's
I guess.
I think it's the best vacuum for sure.
It's the most pertinent vacuum, I would say.
This is more vacuumous than that vacuum.
Damn.
What?
So some wizards like to categorize these creatures as the embodiment of destruction or the absence of air. Vacuum quasi-elementals embody the absence of everything. So yes, technically they are the absence of air, kind of like the other things are the absence of whatever they're made from. Mm-hmm.
So they're just nothing?
So do they actually exist?
They're completely invisible, but their shape is that of amorphous, rubbery, hollow skin. I don't quite know what that means. I took it directly from the Planescape.
Maybe it's kind of like the touching...
What?
Like you
like you can't see them, but you can feel them.
Yeah, you like reach out and like touch, and you kind of feel this. Okay, I'm gonna get kind of gross. It's, you know how like sometimes like serial killers like to, you know, like they like tan the hides of like humans, like a Buffalo Bill kind of thing. That's what I imagine tan, like a thin thing of tan
except
human
it's
skin.
Invisible.
Feels like, except it's invisible.
And it's about 4 feet in diameter.
Awesome, I love that.
So weird.
So kind of like a giant evil ball. Except not evil.
Of skin.
It's just a giant
evil flap
ball
of skin.
Oh! So vacuum quasi-elementals are surprisingly gregarious creatures that gather in small groups whenever possible to converse and interact. On the other hand, they have no love for any other beings and usually attack intruders on their quasi-plane on sight. Like their cousins of salt. Actual wording I took from the compendium. Vacuum quasi-elementals prefer to remain on their home plane.
Yeah, I would imagine.
Every elemental feels a certain level of discomfort when in an alien environment, but vacuum quasi-elementals actually dislike using their absorption abilities, which physically tire them.
Huh.
Much about the vacuum quasi-elementals remains dark. Fact is, no one really knows how they sustain themselves. It's just conjecture that they feed upon the air they draw into themselves. They may not need anything at all to survive, or perhaps their creatures literally survive on nothing. That is, nothingness.
I don't like these creatures.
I imagine the plane of that. Assume, like, let's say they just don't attack someone on sight. And, like, I imagine moving through the plane of vacuum would just be, like, moving through, like, just a series of curtains of human skin that you can't see.
That are just, like, laughing all around you.
Can you hear them?
I don't know.
I mean, I would assume.
Oh, okay. So,
in the plane of vacuum, nobody can hear you scream.
So, you know how the para-elemental planes speak the combination planes languages?
Yeah.
So I would imagine that the quasi-elemental planes speak their elemental planes language components. So imagine a dark and twisted version of the air elemental planes speaking.
Okay, but also I imagine that it does, like, I imagine for some reason that it just is like literally the sound of silence.
Like that deafening sound where you can hear everything.
Yeah, where you can
hear yourself blink.
Yeah.
So it would basically be like an the not an echo chamber. That's another thing. what is it?
Sensory deprivation.
Yes, that.
Yeah.
Oh, God. So yeah.
There could be a vacuum quasi elemental in this room right now, and we'd have no idea.
You're not wrong.
True.
Just reach out and just touch.
I'm not going to do that. Ugh. I don't want to do that.
I don't know why that creeps me out. I'm not the only one who's immensely creeped out by that, am I?
Nah.
Okay, good. Do they just, like, kill you by smothering you with their weird skin?
I don't know. We don't know anything about them. I will mention, there are other types of elementals mentioned in Planescape, including a humunculus elemental. But I really don't have time to get to it. I'm really sorry.
Humunculus. Well, okay then.
That's it. That's all I got. I'm sorry. I'm really sorry.
I was literally about to start singing the first Full Metal Alchemist Brotherhood opening, but I'll spare you guys that.
I'm sorry.
I'm sorry for the quasi-elementals, just their whole existences.
It's really sad, and I feel really bad for them.
Same.
They do have a pretty sad existence. Like, all of them, really.
Yeah.
Except for, I guess, the vacuum, because we just don't know.
I mean, well, at least it seems like they like to hang out with each other.
True.
You're not wrong.
They just don't like anybody else.
Hmm. Well, thank you, everyone, so much for listening. Don't forget to follow us on our various social media platforms.
We'll be sharing some fantastic art of vacuum quasi-elementals.
Don't forget to spread the word to your friends. You know,
your friends who like the empty void of nothingness.
Or just elementals in general.
Yeah.
Or salt.
If you have anything you'd like to suggest as a topic for us to cover, feel free.
Like homunculi.
You can make me do homunculi. You can make any of us do homunculi.
I think everyone that watched that anime wanted to do lust, but whatever.
Anyways, you can email us at dungeonpedia.podcast@gmail.com.
Stupid joke.
And thank you, everyone, once again for listening, and we will catch you here next week on another episode of Dungeonpedia.
It's like 7 degrees of Kevin Bacon with Paracelsus.